Brilliant. Yes. Thanks, Justine. So, Lord Leveson starts off his section on data protection with the following quote. To say that it, the Data Protection Act, is little known or understood by the public, regarded as a regulatory inconvenience to the business world, and viewed as marginal and technical among practitioners, including our higher courts, is perhaps not so far from the truth. And one could add, for good measure, that there's a perception that this is all something from the European Union, which we could well, you know, has very little to do with our domestic law at all. So why am I here trying to talk to you about data protection? Well, as Lord Leveson goes on to say, the difficulty with all this is it's based on a complete misconception about data protection. First off, the most simple thing is, in fact, this didn't originate from the European Union at all. It goes back much further to Council of Europe developments in the 1970s and 1980s originally. But in terms of the scope, purpose, and substance of data protection, it's anything but marginal and technical. Although it is technical, but it's certainly not marginal. So what is data protection? Well, it's a whole legal regime which regulates personal information that's processed. Both terms defined extremely broadly. So processing is anything on a computer, as the Lindquist case said in the European Court of Justice. Placing stuff on the internet, processing literally anything on computer. Personal information, even broader, any information about an identified or identifiable individual, however innocuous, however already in the public domain. The author, a title of an author's book, according to European definitions, is personal data because it is revealing something about that individual. So we're talking hugely expansive definitions. And when we go to the purpose, that's defined equally expansively. The aim of the data protection regime, evidently, is to prevent any misuse of that personal information in relation to processing, any threat to fundamental rights and interests of the individual, including but far from limited to infringement of privacy. Discrimination, unfairness, inaccuracy, all of these come within the sweep of data protection. And the substance, again from the beginning, has been pretty onerous and broad if taken seriously. We've got these broad principles of fairness and accuracy, the presumption that data will only be kept for a limited amount of time, but some pretty peremptory rules about transparency for the data subject, privacy notices, subject access, specific provisions which are much more focused around consent for whole categories of data which are defined as sensitive, and a huge control regime focused on there being a regulator, that people register all their processing with the regulator, and the regulator has substantial powers to ensure implementation of the regime as well. So as I say, this came from a 1981 Council of Europe Data Protection Convention originally. And there's obviously always been a very significant tension with the right to receive and impart information and ideas, freedom of expression. And so again, from the beginning, there was this balancing of these very broad and potentially onerous substance of the regime with the potential for exemptions in the interests, including of freedom of speech. And that's always been looked at very divergently across Europe. So one set of exemptions have to do with purely personal or domestic processing. And we're talking here really about notions of people compiling a Christmas card list on their home computer, or maybe keeping on their mobile phone a list of their personal friends and contacts. And on the other hand, which was always considered not to be privacy invasive, and that's why it was considered appropriate for exemption. On the other hand, we have issues where the most fundamental issues of constitutional rights are involved, namely freedom of the press and those sorts of things. Now, when the UK first passed its data protection legislation in 1984, we went for a very minimalist interpretation of the Data Protection Convention, which in any case was rather non-specific. We did decide to have a complete exemption for domestic processing, this purely personal activity, but we made a conscious decision, despite lobbying from the British Broadcasting Corporation and others, not to have any exemption for the press. And this was supported and to a certain extent implemented by the regulator of the time, now the Information Commissioner, at that time the Data Protection Registrar. So very much this focus on technical registration of processing. So then that comes along Europe very concerned about the divergence in the way this whole Data Protection Convention, which in any case wasn't drafted very well by the Council of Europe, is being implemented across Europe, the threat to transborder data flows across Europe, the threat to trade. And the whole aim of the directive is to get better harmonisation, more specificity. And to a large extent, they succeeded. So the specificity of the regime, which I talked about sensitive data, about transparency for the data subject, was obtained largely in the directive. There are problems of transposition, but the directive is much more specific about what's required. And as regards, compared to our 1984 legislation, much, much more onerous. So that's the first point. And as regards this purely domestic exemption, again, consensus was reached that yes, that exemption should be there, but it should be extremely limited. And again, the Lindquist case backing up a minute from all, you know, the member states and the commission made at the time, they were people who, countries which were unhappy with this, made it clear that any dissemination to the public at large, or in technical terms to an indeterminate number of people, was wholly outside this exemption for personal use, which was only about, you know, strictly private and family life. Now, as regards the media exemption, there were attempts to again ensure this greater specificity, notably by data protection commissioners themselves, who issued in 1997 a recommendation on the interaction between data protection and journalism. But on the whole, that enterprise of getting specificity there was a failure. And there wasn't a huge investment in trying to achieve it, and in any case, it was extremely difficult. And it was a failure. So countries were by and large left with a large margin of discretion as to what to do. And in terms of what we did, bearing in mind that we were forced by Europe by this stage to have a much more onerous regime than we had had in the past, was to make some quite significant but far from unqualified special provision for the press, or actually what was known a little bit more expansively as solely journalistic, literary or artistic activity. And that's mainly encapsulated in section 32. What does it say? Well, it, very briefly, it says that most of the substantive provisions of data protection can be departed from, but only if the person who's publishing the material has a reasonable belief that it's in the public interest to publish that material, and has a reasonable belief that it is incompatible with the purposes of journalism, literature and art to be departing from that. And in fact, both parts of the test are quite important, because you could argue that vis-a-vis, say, accuracy, it's quite difficult to make an argument that it's actually incompatible with your journalistic enterprise to not be accurate in the way you're reporting things. So both parts of the test can should be in play in a way. And in any case, very substantial elements of the regime, at least vis-a-vis the commissioner, remain in play. The duty to promote good practice, including potentially in drawing up codes of conduct, the duty to register processing with the commissioner, his duty to consider and resolve complaints, I mean decide on complaints, and also his duty to consider funding civil litigation vis-a-vis the special purposes. All of these provisions were in the Act. Now, the regulator, who's now the Information Commissioner, was nevertheless extremely unhappy with this compromise, took the position that, in fact, there was little case for exemption from much of the data protection regime, and in fact a very good case derived from this expanded notion of privacy for there to be inclusion of journalism, literature and art within the regime, because of the threat and damage which these activities can pose to privacy and data protection. But on the other hand, when the regime came into force, despite it still being very much qualified in terms of its exemption for the media, there is no sign that the office, the commissioner, developed any overarching or coherent strategy vis-a-vis this sector at all. And this very much brought out in the Leveson report. It's true that by pretty much happen chance, they came across almost industrial violation of one element of the regime, which also is outside any special exemption, namely the illegal procuring, disclosing, or obtaining of personal data. But they didn't interview any journalist in relation to this activity whatsoever. They were involved in the botched, or fairly botched in terms of the sentence handed down, of two individuals who were not journalists. And they put something before Parliament which I think we can see in retrospect didn't really get across the degree of criminality which they had uncovered, and by and large sought to suggest that this was about all sorts of sectors and the press were just sort of one relatively small part of the picture. So that's that side, that's sort of the traditional media. Vis-a-vis the new social media, where, as I say, in terms of cases like Lindquist, which was handed down in 2003, there was even more of a case that they had a special responsibility there. They became ever more adamant that because of this domestic purposes exemption, which, as I say, was at the European level made crystal clear, was not to do with publication to the world, but in fact it had everything to do with the publication to the world. That if you were publishing material on the internet as an individual, no matter how outrageous and unfair your processing was, evidently this domestic purposes thing would come into play and the commissioner could do nothing at all about this activity, which clearly disappointed and upset a number of people who sought to complain to the regulator. Now, these things came to a head, actually, as regards the new social media, in the Kordowski Solicitors from Hell case, which, again, as the word suggests, was a rather defamatory site about solicitors. And the Law Society got involved, sought to go to the commissioner to get it shut down, was rebuffed by this invocation of a domestic purposes exemption, and went to court, where Tugendhat said he could not make head nor tail of the Information Commissioner's legal arguments. They were sort of basically completely outside what the law said, and he really couldn't understand what the commissioner was going on about. And clearly the commissioner should be considering using his powers in such cases, and clearly the commissioner should be considering what it is appropriate or legal for one individual to be saying about another. And this was actually picked up in Leveson's in the Leveson report, where he mentions the Kordowski case, I think, five times very positively as showing that the Information Commissioner has got it wrong vis-a-vis its responsibilities, as he's arguing and as the High Court argued. But, I mean, since the Kordowski case, although the Information Commissioner announced that it had actually got the argumentation rather wrong regarding solicitors from Hell, it's not clear that in actual fact their legal advice or the guidance which they've passed has actually changed all that much, and it's very difficult to locate what the changes they've actually made. And in fact, a number of the sentences which they had put in their letter, which are in the official guidance, which the judge took most umbrage at, are still there, as far as I'm aware, or they certainly were there once it had gone through a review process after the case. So it's very unclear whether the commissioner is simply going through the motions on a lot of this, or whether there's a genuine engagement with some of the arguments that are being made, both by the court and by the Leveson report. But to come on to the Leveson report itself, obviously he took the evidence mainly about what had been done vis-a-vis the traditional press and came to the very clear understanding that, the commissioner was not up to the task of actually performing his duties vis-a-vis the press, and this required reform. Now, some of the reforms which he suggested were about changes to the statutory regime. They are, of quite considerable significance. I don't think they'll be implemented in full. They might be implemented in part. But I'm going to, in some way, bracket that for now, because I think the more interesting thing is that he found that the commissioner, even under the current regime and the current statute, had very, you know, very significant role he was meant to be performing vis-a-vis the press, and that he was failing to do that. And the recommendations made as a result was that he should be promoting a good practice and setting out clearly what the limitations of data protection vis-a-vis journalism were, through use of his Section 51 powers to issue a code of conduct vis-a-vis the media, that he should have a policy about the use of his powers in enforcement vis-a-vis the media, that he should have guidance for data subjects on their rights under data protection vis-a-vis the media. Now, in theory, I mean, on the one hand, the commissioner has, unlike the 1990s, when they were very supportive of a very expansive role for data protection in this area, has been relatively cautious, particularly about the legislative changes. On the other hand, in terms of the regulatory issues, has in theory accepted all of those recommendations. And so we are now going through the process of drawing up, it seems, a code of conduct. A policy will be published on the powers, and there is very limited guidance, but it will be expanded on the rights of data subjects. Now, my view is that this is actually finally pushing the Information Commissioner, albeit maybe reluctantly, into this area. And this will mean, particularly with the code of conduct being as a Section 51 code of conduct, that they will have a role in a way underpinning the new scheme of regulation that will come about vis-a-vis the institutional press. But I think what will be of even more significance is it will become, I think, potentially increasingly untenable for them to rely on some spurious arguments about domestic purposes and these sorts of things, not to deal with sectors which don't have any regulation otherwise at all. And the buck really does stop, not just with them, but only with them, vis-a-vis the new social media. And I would have thought that once you've laid out that even the mainstream media have severe or potentially quite onerous limitations put on them vis-a-vis data protection, it should become increasingly untenable for them to refuse to regulate that sector. And that might be one of the biggest effects potentially of the Leveson report, actually.